Començarem la conferència d'aquesta tarda, en la que tinc l'enorme satisfacció de poder presentar a Eve Gregory. Ella és professora de l'àrea de llengua, cultura, alfabetització i bilingüisme en l'educació i directora del Centre for Language, Culture and Learning a Goldmich, a l'Universitat de Londres. També és membre del Comitè Canadenc de la Social Science Research Council. Es va incorporar al Departament d'Estudis de l'Educació a Goldmich el 1987, després d'haver ensenyat durant 9 anys en escoles i 2 anys al Nain College a Northampton. Les seves investigacions se centren en l'àmbit de la primera infància, el bilingüisme, l'alfabetització de la família, amb un enfoc sociocultural de l'alfabetització. Ha dirigit i codirigit nombrosos projectes d'investigació sobre la llengua familiar dels nens, l'estudi de la història familiar, d'alfabetització amb pares, germans i avis i la transferència d'estratègies cognitives entre la llar i l'escola. Recentment ha codirigit un projecte finançat per l'Economic and Social Research Council sobre els avis i l'aprenentatge dels nens, així com un projecte sobre el desenvolupament d'estratègies d'aprenentatge bilingüe, també finançat per aquest organisme. És autora de moltes publicacions, totes elles dedicades a l'aprenentatge de la llengua en contextos multiculturals i també amb d'altres famílies. La més recent, que és de l'any 2008, és l'aprenentatge de la lectura en un nou llenguatge, posant sentit a les paraules i als mons. És sobre aquesta darrera publicació que avui versarà la seva conferència, titulada Descobrir el coneixement perdut, com utilitzar a l'aula les llengües familiars de l'alumnat. Eve, quan vulguis.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me, everyone? Yes? First of all, I'd like to thank everyone so much for the invitation to come to Hihona and to visit your beautiful city. It really is such a beautiful place. I arrived last night and it was almost like a fairy tale. So coming from the centre of London and London's East End, it really seems like a different world that we're talking about. But that's the very topic of our talk today, children who come to live in different worlds and their families who come to live in different worlds. Before I start, maybe I should say that for those of you who speak some English, I do speak very slowly and I hope very clearly, so you might find it a good exercise to just listen and practice your English rather than having the interpretation. I don't want to say anything against our wonderful interpreters, but sometimes it's good just to listen to the English, even if you don't understand every single word. I'd also like to thank my colleagues, particularly Charmian Kenner, who works with me at Goldsmiths, University of London, Mihira Ruby, and Salman Al-Azadi, who have worked with me as ethnographers and as practitioners with children throughout the last years. I've called my talk today Discovering Lost Knowledge, Using Children's Home Languages in Classroom Settings. What do I mean by lost knowledge? I mean two things. I mean, first of all, the language, the skills, and the knowledge that children bring from home, but that are not recognized in the classroom. That's one thing. And the second thing I mean is that children who are now second and third generation immigrants are actually losing the heritage language as well as the culture and the knowledge of the countries that they have come from and that their families, particularly their grandparents, have both in their countries of origin and in England now. But the children are losing it. And so, when I speak, it's from a very different situation from where you are coming from, because here, immigration is still very new, and I listen to you talking about how to teach Catalan, how to teach Spanish to young children whose languages are different. But in England, we have 20, 30 years and more of children coming across from other countries. And so maybe when you listen, you will see what might be in Catalonia in the years to come. And somebody mentioned a question concerning identity. I think as you listen to me and you think of your country in years to come, an important question will be, how far do we want children who come from perhaps Africa or Eastern Europe or wherever they come from, how far do we want them to lose that language, that identity, that culture? Or how far do we want them to learn the new language and the new culture, but to have both at their disposal? So that's a question I'd like you to carry with you through my talk today. There are two parts to my talk. The first one is the question, what skills, languages, and knowledge might children bring from home and community? And the second one is, how might these be used in classrooms? So for the first part of the talk, I'll be calling upon work as ethnographer, working in homes and communities. And for the second part of the talk, I'll be calling upon work as a practitioner in children's classrooms. So part one, what skills, languages, and knowledge might children bring from home? Somebody, I'm sorry, I can't remember his name, mentioned Vygotsky this morning in our first talk. And Vygotsky, in his book Thought and Language, published in Britain in 1962, mentions Wolfgang Goethe, the German poet, who says, "He who knows no other language does not truly know his own." And Vygotsky goes on to develop ways in which having access to two, three, or more languages provides a treasure trove for knowing lots of different cultures, different ways of seeing the world. Tajul, who is now 24, with whom I worked when he was a five-year-old and he had only just come to Britain, when I visited him last year, said the same thing, really, as the experts, Vygotsky and Goethe. He says this, "Learning a language is like a gift. It's learning different cultures, isn't it? I mean, it helps you integrate with different people, too. I think, to be honest with you, that people who don't speak another language, they don't like to see outside the box. It's definitely an advantage." But the question is, why, in many countries of Europe, do we only celebrate children's knowledge of other European languages? If you come to Britain and you're bilingual with French or German or Spanish, it's considered to be a skill, a gift. Of course, it is. Let's look at one little girl. Her name is Pia, and she's growing up in France. She's five, and her mum is English. The Tiger Who Came to Tea is a very English story. Maybe it's been translated, I don't know. But here you can see her writing, "The Tiger Who Came to Tea, Pour Mama et Papa." Her father is German, and she attends a school where she learns French and German simultaneously. The French school has all the French approaches to education, and the German school has the German curriculum and all the German ways to education. So what she's written here as a five-year-old in German is, Wieso hört mir niemand zu? Ich hab schon in den Kummerkasten hinten getan. What this means is that she's actually put her little complaint in the complaints box at school, but nobody seems to be listening to her. And her mum, of course, is too busy writing her own thesis to listen to her daughter. In her French school, her French class, she's learning from a very typical French book. Here you can see her phonic work there. Okay, so Pia has these languages at her disposal. But when we see something like this, what do we think? Unfortunately, many teachers still now in England think that this is not something to be valued. But if you actually look carefully at it, you would see that Hazanat, who is also five, is actually learning in three different scripts here, and he's practicing them. He's learning the English script, he's learning the Arabic script for when he learns to read the Quran, and you can see little bits if you look carefully from the Arabic script, and he's also learning Bengali, which is a third script. So what I want to do this afternoon is to actually celebrate here all children's languages and cultures, regardless of social class and race. And certainly in Britain, there is a danger that children who come from lower social classes and whose languages are not recognized are not seen to have the same skills as children like Pia, whereas in fact, they have perhaps even more because they are also learning in different scripts. What I'm going to do now is to take you to the East End of London, which is where my work as an ethnographer has been taking place over the last 20 years. I worked in homes and communities of children living in the square mile which is east of the City of London. I hope you can just see a little bit from that map. If you can, you see the River Thames, you see the Tower of London, which is the big block over to your left, and there, of course, is the City of London, arguably, at least maybe until the famous credit crunch, the wealthiest square mile in the world. Next door to the City of London, you see Spitalfields, and those little figures that you see with a knife in their hand are actually Jack the Ripper's victims, and I chose this map because it was the clearest in showing the schools where I worked. So in fact, almost all the schools were exactly where one or the other of Jack the Ripper's victims happened to be. I'm sorry about that, but it is a very clear map, actually. I think you'll agree with me. And so that area is actually one of the poorest in Britain. It has the highest number of respiratory diseases, and it has mostly the highest poverty levels in the country. But as you can see from that map, to give you some idea, it is actually next door to what is probably the wealthiest square mile in Britain, if not in the world. This is a picture of the area where the families lived, just one of their markets, but you can begin to see the multicultural aspect of it as you look. Here are some of the children going hand in hand off to the East London Mosque, which is one of the largest mosques in Britain, and it's actually the only mosque in London where the call to prayer is reverberating every day. And so, with my colleagues, I went and visited families to find out what was going on in terms of language and literacy in children's homes. And my question was, what linguistic and literacy knowledge do children bring with them from their homes and their community classes into the British school? I have to say that when I started this work, most teachers had no idea of what was going on in children's homes. They thought the children only spoke other languages. They weren't even sure which ones they did speak. They didn't know whether the parents could read in their own language or not. And they certainly didn't know whether the children could read and write in other languages or not. Well, I think after some years, the level of awareness now amongst teachers is much higher, partly because of this work. I collected together what the children were doing as they went to their classes after school. And most children, aged between 5 and 7, were going 5 days a week, if not more, to either a class to learn Bengali, or to learn Urdu, or to learn Punjabi, if that was their mother tongue, or to learn from the Quran in Arabic. This is the first page of the Bengali alphabet, and there are children across the area learning it to this day. I visited a class just last week where children were also learning it. This is a slightly more difficult page. It's a rhyme in Bengali, saying about grandmother being sick and doctor having to come with some medicine. This, by contrast, is a very different script, as you can see. In fact, it's the first page of a preparation for reading the Quran. And here the children have to learn how to say all the symbols. They have to learn that each symbol can have different accents, and according to the accent, so the symbol is pronounced differently. They need to learn all of this before they even start reading the Quran. So this is their second new script and new literacy. On top, of course, is the English script and literacy. And so it became clear that children had all sorts of literacies and languages outside school that their teachers knew very little about. This, I hope if it works, will show you what one of the young children was actually doing at home. We got sound somewhere. Do we have sound? No. This should have sound, actually. No. Well, if we don't have the sound, I'll just carry on. Never mind. What you would see in this video, if we had the sound, is the little girl, Sumaya, as you can see with her grandmother, learning to read the Quran. And the little baby... Well, I think we can't hold it up now.
It's close.
Sorry? Oh. There's nothing there.
No?
I think we better just go.
No. There's a cat. Ah. It's in the water.
Sorry about this. Things are always complicated, aren't they, with technology? Anyway, you will see if we get to the video, you'll hear that Sumaya is practicing with her grandmother how to read the Quran, and the little baby is listening to what she's doing. Oh, let's see if it comes now. It's coming, but I can't hear anything. I can't hear anything. The film is coming, but there's no sound. No. Which is a shame, because the next ones need sound as well. I think we better leave it. Don't worry, we'll just leave it, and if we can get it for the other things, we can. Sorry, it just messes it up, don't worry. Let's go on. These are some more sound clips. Oh, do you want me to go back to it? No, I don't know how to do the sound. Okay. These are some more sound clips, in fact, which I don't suppose you'll be able to hear. We'll try them. No, they've lost the sound. In one of the sound clips, you would hear one of the children, or some of the children, singing together from their films in Bengali. And in the second sound clip, which obviously also won't come now, you would be able to hear how the children actually sing some hymns from their schools in England. So what our work was showing was the very rich wealth of knowledge that children had from home as they worked with their brothers and sisters and as they worked with their grandparents. I'm sorry that you'll just have to imagine it. Maybe we'll get it going at the end. Okay. Don't worry. Okay, so let's go on now to the second part of my talk, which is how might teachers build upon this knowledge that children bring with them into the classroom to use with all their children in the classrooms. Now, schools in East London have a whole variety of different languages and different literacies that children bring with them. Some schools have 90% or more of children who speak the same language. That language is often Bengali because the children come from Bangladesh. Other schools might have 50% of their children from Bangladesh, 20% from Somalia, 10% from India, some from Britain, some from Eastern Europe. In fact, there are well over 300 languages that are now spoken in London schools. And Tower Hamlets, the area of East London that I was talking about, in fact, has many of those languages. There are also, of course, many different African languages that are spoken. Just a few names of researchers whom you might know and who have influenced our work. Because after having found out about the richness of languages and practices that children bring with them from their homes, we wanted to see how teachers could actually use these in the classroom. Because let's not forget, these children are English, but they see themselves as British or English Bangladeshis. They see themselves as British Chinese, or they see themselves as British Indians. They have two identities, if not more. And so the people who really influenced our work was, first of all, a team of researchers from the States. Some of you might have read the work of Lewis Moll and his team. The term funds of knowledge is a term that he uses. He talks about the funds of knowledge that children have who live in Latino families who have come to the United States to live. And he describes a very interesting project, how researchers from the university joined teachers in schools to visit children's homes and families and find out about what people did know and what they did do with reading and writing and language in homes and communities. And what he found out in one project that he worked on with his team was that parents were often expert sweet makers. And so from this knowledge, the teachers invited the parents into school, or the grandparents, or the uncles and aunts, and they shared their knowledge with the children, with all the children, and they made sweets in school. And they went on to respect the families more and more because they realized that the school was only one area of knowledge that children have. Children have many different areas of knowledge that they need to be able to call upon in their lives. So that was one person who influenced us a lot. Another person, also from the United States, and whom you might know, is Barbara Rogoff and her team. Barbara Rogoff looked at the whole notion of scaffolding between a caregiver and a young child and said, we need to think more in terms of guided participation. In other words, how do caregivers and children work together to learn? She looked at families from very different backgrounds. Some of her families were from Guatemala, some of her families were from Finland, some of her families were from Salt Lake City in the United States. And she found, and of course we all know it, but that's what researchers do, isn't it? They show us what we really already know from our common sense. She found that the children learned very, very differently. And so what she showed was that teachers need to know, for example, that some children, for example, the children who came from Guatemala, learned much more through observation and through listening than through being taught something directly. Whereas children from Salt Lake City, for example, interacted very directly with their parents and caregivers. Their parents got down on the floor and played with them. They interacted with them with books, and they taught them all the time. But the children from Guatemala had just as many skills. They simply had different skills, and they learnt them differently. We also found, for example, in our work, that the children who learned to read the Quran had extremely good memories and were also very good at writing and doing very, very neat, beautiful drawings, much more than the English monolingual children could. And so they had different areas of knowledge. And finally, I have been working with a team of researchers on a notion of what we call syncretism. Syncretism is referred to show what children bring from home and what they learn from school and how they put both of these knowledge centers and these languages and these skills together to make something new. It's a shame you couldn't hear the sound clips, but maybe we can get them at the end, because you would hear how what the children are doing is not the same as a hymn taught in the English classroom, is not the same as the video songs that they heard in Bengali, but is indeed something new. And I think if you listen to your children in schools, that's precisely what you will find too. And so these are the sorts of bodies of knowledge that was informing our work. Finally, just to mention a last person whose work has influenced us, Homi Bhabha and the location of culture. Homi Bhabha speaks about border lives. In other words, lives at the border of different countries, of different cultures, of different languages. And he says, border lives need to be examined. Moments where space and time cross to produce complex figures of difference and identity, past and present, inside and outside, inclusion and exclusion. And I think that sums up very well the situation that many of our children are finding themselves in schools today. I leave it to you, of course, to think how this might be relevant for your children in schools. But if it's not now, and I think it might be even now, I think it certainly will be in a few years' time. And so it's with all of this that we come on to the second part, really, of my talk, which is the action research as a practitioner in classrooms. The project that I'm going to talk to you briefly about, we called Bilingual Learning Strategies in Mainstream Classrooms. I, with my colleagues, two of whom spoke Bengali, went into two schools to actually find out what the children could do still in Bengali, and to encourage the children to use both English and their mother tongue to learn different tasks. Now, these children were largely third generation Bangladeshi British children. They were obviously in classrooms with children from many other countries. But these children were stronger now in English than in their home language. We worked with two groups of children, 6-year-old children and 11-year-old children. This was the children's views, and I think it's pertinent for you too, although your children are probably not in that situation yet. They said, "It's our mother tongue, and we are forgetting it." They also said, "If we learn in two languages, we're going to be expressing our culture." And so there were really strong identity issues. One of the children said, "Slowly, slowly, we forget Bengali, and then we will be like the English people, speaking only one language." And I think this is particularly relevant today when we're looking at what do we want to create? Do we really want to create just a homogeneous country where people all speak the same language? Or do we want to celebrate difference and diversity? We did a number of different tasks with the children because it was clear that although the children could speak some Bengali, they couldn't speak enough to be able to actually do academic tasks anymore. One of the things we did was to look at books in different languages. Some of these books I had used myself when I was a teacher 20 years earlier, and older secondary age children had made the books to be used in two languages with younger children in school. They were traditional stories. This is The Lion and the Peacock in English and Urdu. Another one was The Snake and the Mongoose in English and Punjabi. And the third one was The Hare and the Tortoise in English and Urdu. These books were illustrated and written by older secondary children, as I said, and used with younger ones. They were used principally to teach children English. Now, 20 years later, we found we were using the same books, but to help children learn Bengali, and indeed, to look at other languages too. So we took the languages out, and we did a number of exercises where the children made up the story, and made up the story in different languages. Often, the children couldn't write the script of the language that they could speak at home, and so they used transliteration in order to be able to read what they had written. We did other activities too. For example, with the older children, we found out that the making of quilts was a very common thing in Bangladesh. You know, quilts that you put on beds. And so we did a theme with the 11-year-olds about quilts. We asked the children to interview a quilt trader to pretend that one of them was selling quilts and to interview him. The children did this in English or in Bengali. We asked them to design a quilt. We asked them to write a piece describing the quilt as if they were the curator of a museum. And so there were many activities that the children became engaged in different languages. This is an example of one of the quilts that one of the children designed. As we were doing this work, we found that we were developing the children's metalinguistic skills. Because the children used transliteration if they didn't know the script of the language of origin, they were having to use phonic strategies from their English knowledge in order to be able to transliterate Bengali, or Bangla, as it's often called. And the children would say things to each other like, how do you spell kena? Just sound it out. So some children decided to use KH and others just K. And so they began to understand the arbitrariness of language as well. We developed a number of bilingual learning strategies. We developed with the teachers a presentation of key vocabulary and structures bilingually. In other words, the teacher and her assistant, because in every class that has a lot of children from different languages in Britain, there will be an assistant teacher who can work beside the teacher bilingually. So they would present key vocabulary and structures bilingually. We helped them find bilingual learning resources, books and other things, tapes, videos, etc. We used transliteration with the children. And finally, we varied the groups of the children, because in English primary schools, children will often work in small groups, and so we carefully controlled which children sat in which groups, so that in each group, at least two or sometimes more different languages could be used by the children. We found, in fact, that the whole class, particularly the monolingual children, benefited from this broadening of the curriculum. We found that we were opening children's eyes to other worlds that were on their doorstep. We found that the linguistic knowledge and the cultural understanding increased for all the children that we were working with. Above all, we found that the monolingual children benefited too. This was one monolingual child speaking. She said, "When I used Bengali, it made me feel different because it was other people's language. I didn't know it at first. When I started to try it, it made me feel a bit different." We also found that some children who had learning difficulties began to learn or to show that they were able to learn more when they did things that other children who might be good were not able to do. For example, speak in different languages, and so that helped them too. The final bit I'd like to come on to in this talk, and I'm hoping that in a few minutes the video I want to show is going to work, although there might be some problems there with sound, I hope not, was this, which is a chora. A chora is the Bengali word for a lullaby, or for a poem, or for something that is between a poem and a prayer. It's a poem that has a religious meaning as well. But here, it's a lullaby. A lullaby is the sort of song that a mother will sing to a baby in order to get her or him to go to sleep. And in this chora, you can see the mother is pointing to the moon. And I'll show you the text in English, but this was what the children looked at first, and then they looked at the chora transliterated, that is using the Bengali but with the English script, and then they looked at the English script. And these were 11-year-olds. This was the English script. I'll just read it to you. "Come, come, Uncle Moon. Come, come, Uncle Moon, and touch the forehead. Moon, come, and touch the forehead of the moon. When the rice is made, we'll give you the husk. When the fish is cut, we'll give you the head. We'll give you the milk of the black cow. We'll give you the bowl for the milk. Moon, come, and touch the forehead of the moon." Now you can see there were many things to discuss, cultural issues from this. Why do they have the fish head? Why not the whole fish? And so the class discussed about the belief in Bangladesh that the head is the best part of the fish, and if you eat the head, it will make you clever, it will make you brainy. They discussed the little black spot that the baby had on its forehead, which is supposed to protect against the evil eye. And they discussed the metaphor about the moon there. And they discussed many different metaphors. They then compared this chora with an American lullaby, "Hush, Little Baby." Some of you might know it, "Hush, Little Baby, Don't You Cry." And so they went on to do a whole series of lessons based on this chora. What I've brought with me today is a video that was made by our Open University. We have an Open University, as I'm sure you do too, for people who haven't managed to study when they were younger, and they can now study through television programs, through videos, etc., etc. And they do many different courses. And they came and videoed our work in school and gave us, of course, the video, which is now used throughout the country, in fact, for different courses. It was difficult for me to pick out a few minutes for you to watch, but I've picked out just 4 minutes, which I'd like to show you if I can, and hope that that will show you or give you some flavor of the work that I've been engaged in over the years. And then when we've seen the video, we'll stop and have questions. I think I need, yes, Christina to, or somebody to come and help me here. Okay. I hope the sound's gonna work. Mm-hmm.
El sol teniu aquí ara, eh? El sol.
Sí. Sí.
A veure.
It was working, so let's have that's the spot it's on.
Yeah.
Oh, look, can we get someone else?
I see. See, yeah.
Okay, so can I have that spot again that was on?
Lee?
Where it was?
Yeah. Lee?
Picture.
If. Do you. That is. Was it shown? Was per Marta or no?
Can you find it?
És que jo ja no sé. Vale.
We can stop and then we search and can we get a picture and the sound, that's all we need and I'll find
the spot. Bueno, no. Va bé, Cristina, no. Digue-li que si vol marcar amb això que li deixo tot l'aparato aquest.
Now it works.
And then we search for the... Okay.
If...
Will there be some sound?
Yes, there is some.
Let's see what happens. It's lost its...
You need that?
Oh, it's at the beginning. That's at the beginning.
You need that.
No, no, no.
Okay, that's it. Okay. Sorry about the wait.
You need that.
No, not really. No? But we need the sound a bit louder. Can we get that?
For children. So, for example, the poem that's used in the lesson is another one that's blind, deaf, or having a hearing son as one of the parents is also a source of very complex and interesting metaphors which can be discussed in a class. And children with English as a traditional language particularly can have difficulties with metaphorical concepts in English. So the opportunity to look at metaphors in both languages, in Northern and in English, and learn by equally can considerably help them to enrich their understanding. From the cultural knowledge point of view, they did know the name of the poem. They would not necessarily understand all the content of it and what it would lead to, but they felt very keen to do so because they feel very strongly attached to Bangladesh. The poem refers to giving a fish head as a gift, and they were very surprised by that. Why do you want to give anyone a fish head? Why not the whole fish? It also referred to a black spot in place on the forehead on their feet to protect them. Well, they just had a black spot in place on the forehead, they didn't know why, they wanted to know that. So they wrote questions in the first group activity we did around the poem. The group of children wrote questions to ask their parents about the poem, took those questions home, and came back and shared their answers with the group. When they brought the answers back from their parents, they discovered that, for example, the head is a tasty bit of the body. It's the bit that contains the brain, and so it's considered as to make the brain too. And they realized that was something typical of Bangladeshi culture that they hadn't known before. They discovered that the black spot was to protect against the evil eye, and a lot of them had known that before. So in this way, they were gaining greater ownership of cultural knowledge that was really vital to their identities at least simultaneously British and Bangladeshi.
I think I better stop it then.
One of the many findings was that children children, second and third generation of bilingual children, do still have bilingual skills that can support and enhance their academic learning. But they are at risk of losing these skills unless they are recognised and made use of in the mainstream schools. Another finding was that teachers were very surprised to discover to what extent the children could draw on and use their skills as part of their learning. They also realised that the children needed more support to maintain and develop their knowledge time in order to do that.
Okay, perhaps it was difficult for you to see exactly what the children were doing. They were doing a Venn diagram with the similarities and differences between the American lullaby, Hush Little Baby, and the Bengali Chora, I Chad Mama, and in the middle, of course, they were writing the similarities. That's just a small snippet of some of the work that we were doing. And we have gone on now to produce wider curricula and curriculum guidelines for schools, because in Britain now, we're thinking much more in terms of children's identities, actually, because they do not have trouble with speaking English anymore. They have very little problems with speaking English, but that doesn't mean to say that they only want to have an English identity. And I think this is something that we're all going to have to think about very seriously in the future. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry the sounds didn't work.
Sí, moltes gràcies. Ella està molt preocupada perquè no s'ha pogut sentir el so. Li demanem disculpes pels problemes que hi ha hagut amb la tecnologia, però em sembla que s'ha entès perfectament tot el que ha dit. Ara el que farem serà obrir un torn de paraules. I per tant, si voleu podem començar. Tenim fins a les 5 per fer-li les preguntes que vulgueu, els aclariments que vulgueu, etc. Aprofito per dir-vos, mentre us animeu a fer preguntes, que l'organització m'ha demanat que durant la pausa hauríeu de passar a signar el control d'assistència per recepció abans d'entrar a la taula d'anàlisi d'experiències. I també que us agrairà que es portin visibles les acreditacions, que porteu visibles les acreditacions.
I got this in the right place. I'm seeing that one over.
No, it's that. It's here.
So it's making rather a noise.
Okay. It's I think it's one or two, no?
Yeah. I don't know. Vale.
Bé. Alguna pregunta? Va. Aquí. In English.
Yeah.
How would you have had the discussion approach if the children were just arrived and trying to learn English?
Is it okay to speak with it? You can hear me? Yes. Okay. Well, we were in a very similar position, of course, in the 1970s and 1980s, and we still do have some children coming across, although obviously the majority of children now do speak English. When the children came in the 1970s and 1980s, yeah, can you hear me? Yeah. When the children came in the 1970s and 1980s, some teachers were really at sea as to what to do. But certainly some of us used children's books in the way in which I heard two people describing this morning here in the auditorium in their communications that they gave. What we tried to do was often to have dual language materials And we still do try that. We have a number of books which have been translated into different languages because we feel, and I think it's quite a strong feeling in Britain too, even now amongst teachers, that if you can actually encourage children to develop their mother tongue as well as the new language, that there's going to be more benefits than hindrances. We also used to pair children up, and this is what schools still do when they do have newcomers to the English language. They will partner or pair a child who is new to the country with a child who is either more experienced in the language or a child who was born in the country. And so they try in that way to encourage children to mix together. We do not remove children from classrooms anymore. That was something that used to be done at a very early stage. Children used to go out of their classrooms to work in a small group. But what we now do much more, and you could see it also in this classroom, is that we have assistant teachers who work with teachers in the classroom. And the idea is that everybody participates together, because otherwise there's a danger that children might miss subjects that they're actually really quite good at, like maths, etc., and would be able to shine, in fact. And so we now keep children in the classroom wherever possible. Is that okay? Sorry, I can't see you. Is that okay? Well, certainly, yes, because obviously most of the curriculum is going to be in English, there's no doubt about that. And so children will always have access to a lot of English in the curriculum. But I think it's really very important for children to be able, especially slightly older children who are no longer 4 or 5, to be able to be seen as experts, really. Because otherwise, they're only seen as novices when they come into a class of children who are much better at the language than they are. And so I have one memory of a little girl some years ago who had come across from China. And she was very, very shy in the classroom because her English was very poor. And so I and a classroom teacher asked another Chinese child who was much older to write a story with her in Chinese, in Mandarin, and they wrote it. And the little girl was actually a fluent Mandarin speaker and writer. And then we had a lesson in the classroom where she taught the children the story in Mandarin. And the teacher had the English version from the older bilingual Chinese child. And it's unbelievable, really, the effect that that had on both the class of children and on the child herself, because immediately she was seen as an expert. And the other children said, oh, she can do that. She can write in Chinese. You know, and we said, well, yes. And then, of course, they went on to say, oh, she can do Kung Fu, you know. And, of course, as soon as a child is expert, or the other children imagine that they might be expert in something that they're very keen on, then, of course, they see the child very differently. So, yes. Just a minute,
I can.
no solo que hay un whisky, sino también un factor social que no deprimía determinadas zonas como la nuestra cultura.
It's very difficult for me to hear because there's a lot of interference on here. I'm not quite sure what it is, but I think you were saying about teaching children through songs. I can't hear.
Number three.
It's on number three.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Sorry about this.
Number three.
Yes.
It's
very. Lots of interference.
Number three.
That's what I had it on.
Yeah.
Let's try again. I'm terribly sorry. That's better. No, that one's. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Could you say it again? I'm terribly sorry.
Com des del punt de vista de les funcions de treball anem a anar realitzant molt fons els problemes del bilingüisme i com ho havíem de fer perquè aquest bilingüisme fos realment eficaç amb dues llengües, amb el grup. Sí. Un dels factors que jo recordo com a molt present és el fet que quan una de les dues llengües té poc prestigi social té greus dificultats per desenvolupar-se i provoca el noi una greu dificultat també per aprendre la segona llengua. Establim un carallol, diríem actualment, no? Aquest
Catanyol, it's Catalan Spanish. Catalan in Spanish. Catanyol.
En Spanglish.
Spanglish.
Aquestes dues llengües són altres problemes. Com es fa directament a les llengües amb el problema del prestigi que va amb el noi, que no se li vol ensenyar? Llavors, aquesta situació que s'ha de plantejar en la via del resultat, em sembla molt interessant, no s'ha de dir com un govern de l'instaurar, no? Perquè quin prestigi té aquesta llengua dins de la societat anglesa? Quina consideració tindran els propis nois del que els fòssils estan fent aquí per d'alguna manera d'obres perquè no dubten la seva llengua materna i poder tampoc si els està intentant ensenyar a l'escola. No sé, no acabo de veure on tenem amb aquesta experiència. Em sembla molt maca, m'agradaria poder-ho mirar davant, però no comprenc on tenim, qui és
Yes, okay, I think I can, yes. First of all, I'll take the bit about mixing languages. Well, obviously children will mix languages. We all mix languages when we're learning English and another language, and that is just simply a stage that children will go through, or adults will go through too. And part of schooling is actually to make children aware of different languages that they can speak and what belongs to one language and what to another. And in fact, children will learn this anyway, you'll find, and they do not continue to mix languages once they are past a certain fluency in the language. So I have to say that we do not have that difficulty as far as I know, and you could hear the children on the tape that you listened to. In fact, I could have played a lot more children at the beginning who were speaking extremely fluently in English about what they do and what they've done in the classroom. In fact, their English is so good that they do not take on the language of East Londoners and the dialect or accent of East Londoners because, very interestingly, they take their English from the teachers in the classroom and from the media that they listen to. They do not take their English from other children generally because, to be honest with you, they're not hearing as much English from other children as they are from their teachers. And so that's the issue of mixing languages, and we don't find that they mix languages. It's true that when they speak at home and when they speak some Bengali, for example, to their grandmother or to older people in their family, they will put English words in what they're saying, but this is quite normal and natural if you're living in a country which is not the majority language spoken in that particular country. It is quite normal and natural to actually include words of that language. As far as the prestige of the language is concerned, well, this is at present, of course, true. Every language has its lack of prestige if it's a language that is not regarded highly in the world, or a great prestige. But I don't think we say, do we, that because English might be most widely spoken in the world, apart from Mandarin, we don't say that everybody in the world should speak English or Mandarin. We say that it is a wealth to be able to have a number of different languages that are spoken. And in fact, in Britain, what's happened now is that for the first time, we're going to be teaching young children from 7 upwards a new language, which is really quite a new thing for us, because having a language where you don't necessarily need to learn other languages, it's meant that we've been very poor at languages in the past. From 2010 onwards, every child will have to speak another language. Now, some schools are choosing French, some are choosing Spanish, a few are choosing German, some are choosing Mandarin, some are choosing Bengali, others are choosing another language. And this means that all the children in the class will be learning that language. But crucially, the aims of this program are that children become aware of other languages as a means of learning. They are not going to become fluent in those languages during the early years, but they are going to be able to see that language is an arbitrary system. It's a system where we actually do things in different ways. As that one child was saying at the beginning of the video that you watched, oh, well, we put things in a different place in Bengali. Languages order their words in different ways. You can say one thing in Bengali that you can't say in English or in another language. Some languages have a lot of words for different relatives in the family, others don't. And so part of that program, and a very strong part of that program, is actually showing children that languages help you think, and that you can see things in different ways through learning another language. And so I don't think that the question that you've posed is a dangerous one, if you like. I think what you're saying is, what's the point, if I interpret what you're saying correctly, you're saying, what's the point in teaching the children Bengali because it's a low prestige language? Is that correct? Is that what you're saying? Yeah, well, I don't really think that that's the point here, actually. And I have to say that in one of the schools that we're now working in, and it's one that is very, very close to the City of London and has children from lots of different backgrounds, some from Japan, some from Eastern Europe, some from Bangladesh, etc. It is the English parents who are asking for bilingual education in English and Bengali for their children when they are young, because they say, we need our children to understand more of what those children can do. And I think that's quite an interesting indicator of what some people think who choose to live in areas that are multilingual and multicultural. Perhaps it's just as well they do.
Alguna altra pregunta? Els d'allà dalt. No. finish?
Okay, yeah? Fine.
Okay. Bé, doncs si no hi ha cap més pregunta, moltes gràcies Yves, i moltes gràcies a tots vosaltres. Recordeu que a 6:15 comencen les sessions d'experiències i que heu de signar per poder tenir el certificat. Gràcies a tots i totes.